This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Puck picked up by Pettersson down the right side, holds at the circle, grabs it off for Hughes. Hughes back out, and now from the right circle, Stetcher scores! It looked like the Globetrotters out there. 3-0 Vancouver.
The only thing missing was Curly Neal. That was unbelievable right there.
Kenny Albert with the call from last night's Canucks-Blues game. It really was a one-sided affair. The Canucks dispatching the Blues, not with a bang, but with a whimper as the Stanley Cup champions go home and the upstart Canucks move on to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs to meet the Vegas Golden Knights.
Nice that there's one Canadian team in the second round.
You know what I love? I mean, it's nice that there's a Canadian team.
Just one.
Sunday's game. One Canadian team. Do you know what time Sunday's game starts? Game one of the Golden Knights Canucks? Sunday. It's not Sunday.
It's not a good time.
What time do you think it would be? I mean, you have all day Sunday.
I would hope it would be either like noon or 1 in the afternoon or 7 o'clock at night.
Right. Something where it would be, you know, where people could watch.
Yes.
Without having to stay up, you know, until the wee hours of the morning.
What time is it? Because I don't know.
9:30.
9:30 in the morning.
No, 9:30 central time at night.
Okay.
Not in the morning. In the morning, that would be fine. That would make
more
sense.
That's even worse.
No, it's better. I mean,
no, I'm saying 9:30 is worse than 9:30 in the morning.
Yes, 9:30 at night. So you have one Canadian team left.
Yep.
And you're playing that game at 9:30 at night. And I know that that means it's at 7:30 in Vancouver.
Sure.
But come on. You can't start that game at 6 o'clock in Vancouver?
Yeah,
Like, the schedule makers for the NHL continue to make decisions that leave me so befuddled at best, and I'm being polite. You have one Canadian team. How are you putting that game to start at 10:30 Eastern time for everyone east of us?
Well, like you said, I mean, even having it at 8 or 8:30 Central time, right? Like, have it at least 1 or 2 hours even. Like, I understand maybe you can't have the game, you know, early evening, something like that, but that's too late because... Yes, okay, yeah, in the Pacific time zone, that's fine. Everybody's asleep in Toronto.
But in the Pacific time zone, they're going to watch that game if it's at 6 o'clock local time or if it's at 4 o'clock
doesn't
local
matter.
Time.
Yeah.
But it's just a ridiculous schedule.
Well, I was talking to, sorry to cut you off, Drew. I seem to do that at least once a show.
Yeah, but once a segment, more likely.
No, but when you're talking about, you know, the Dallas-Colorado series, that starts tonight, right?
Yeah.
You've got game one, and I realized there were a lot of people that were saying, how do you start round two, before the first round ends? The NBA did that for how many years?
The NBA's been doing that for years.
Yeah, decades,
and
right?
The NHL finally is getting on board as opposed to making teams sit for, you know, 3 weeks before they start their series.
And we're going to get into that Dallas-Colorado series, and it's going to be amazing. Yeah. I mean, these are, you know, two teams
right now looks like, I mean, granted, Arizona didn't field a team for the last couple games in that series. They just didn't show up. But, I mean, Dallas-Colorado is going to be a fun series. But we're talking about the Canucks and the Blues, and the Canucks obviously went out. And, you know, you thought you might see some fight back from the Blues in Game 6, but they were down 3-0 before, in a blink of an eye. That game was over almost before it started, which was... You know, I think the Blues were ready to get out. I think they were done, and they were ready to get out of here. I mean, it was bizarre in the way that St. Louis played last night. And I think it goes back to what Rick Bowness said. And, you know, you wanted to talk about Rick Bowness's comments about how people aren't necessarily acknowledging how difficult it is for these players to be in the bubble. Because every time a team is facing elimination for the most part, or way more often now in these playoffs than in other playoff series.
You almost have to pack your bags in anticipation.
But these players seem ready to get out of there. I mean, you saw what, and I'm not saying that players didn't want to try, because I would never say that.
No.
But usually it's so hard to eliminate a team in the playoffs, right? Unless there's a real one-sided difference in talent.
Like, say, Colorado, Arizona.
Right, that was a talent disparity. But even then, 7-1 or 7-0 6, I mean, they scored what? Colorado scored what? 14 goals in the last two games?
Yeah. I think they had something like 35 goals in 5 games.
If you're the St. Louis Blues, and this is a regular playoffs, and you're facing elimination, I would guarantee you that they would have a better performance yesterday than they did within the bubble. And I think it's because the bubble is very stressful for a lot of players, and that when the opportunity to get back to your families, you know, is on the horizon, maybe you're not as desperate to keep playing in the bubble as you would be in a normal circumstance.
Yep, I hear you. One thing I would mention, just going back to, you know, yesterday's game six between the Canucks and the Blues, and then we can get into the, you know, the comments by Rick Bonus there. The Canucks didn't have a shot on net. I think it was for the last 8 minutes of the first period. And then it was Antoine Roussel, if you remember. He got the Canucks' second goal yesterday. That was the first shot. I'd have to go back and look. You know, it was put out there by Thomas Drantz and others, Jeremy Rutherford. But so there was a period of that game where it was a one-goal game, and the Blues were in it. So I agree with you, especially, you know, parts of that second period. Like the Canucks, what did they score? 3 goals in that second period, and they went up 4-0. So that second period was completely dominated by the Canucks. I agree with you. But, you know, the Blues were in there, and, you know, they did fight right to the end, right? Jaden Schwartz, you know, he made it 5-2. So, you know, give the Blues credit. I mean, they didn't, you know, completely wilt, but I agree with you. I mean, there were parts of that second period where you're like, okay, when they went up 4-0, and they were talking about on the broadcast, you know, how, you know, maybe they should have pulled Jordan Binnington. We have to talk about that. I mean, yeah. Jake Allen comes in for game three, right? And this series could have easily been, you know, Canucks in five, right? Like, the Canucks were on their way, yeah. But then the Blues win game four handily. Like, it was, what, 3-1 game four? But that game was, you know, completely one-sided in the Blues' favor. And game five was the turning point for me. Like, after Vancouver won game five when the Blues were up, and, you know, Travis Green made that switch. And, you know, I mentioned Thomas Drantz. Hopefully we can get him on the show. He writes for The Athletic, covers the Canucks, used to work for the Florida Panthers with our boy Richie there. Thomas Drantz had a great piece on game five and the moves that Travis Green made. He moved Jake Virtanen up to that line with Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. And of course, Virtanen scored that goal. You know, he faked that pass and he scored that sneaky goal on Jake Allen. But the line combinations and how he hid them in warm-up, I'm not sure if you read that piece, but Travis Green was really sneaky, but he made the right moves, and, you know, he got a lot out of his bottom lines, right? Like, we saw Jay Beagle score a big goal yesterday. Like, that was the story for me for the Canucks. Yes, Jacob Markstrom was fantastic in the series. Markstrom was better than Binnington. Markstrom was better than Jake Allen, but, you know, Travis Green deserves a lot of credit. He out-coached Craig Berube.
I would agree. I thought the whole goaltending situation in St. Louis was bizarre, and I don't know where this leaves Jordan Binnington going forward next season.
I think he's still your guy, Drew. I mean, like, Jake Allen is not your answer. Like, Jake Allen wasn't the answer 2 years ago. Jordan Binnington came in, saved the Blues season. I mean, he could have been the Conn Smythe winner. I just think Binnington, you know, didn't have his A game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's as simple as that. I think he's still a great goalie.
He's probably not as good as he was getting credit for last year. Yeah. And this
that was
year.
A magical run.
Yeah. But he's probably, he's not as bad as he looked in this series.
Right.
But, you know,
You're not going to go back to Jake Allen. I'll tell you that much.
No, you know, because, you know, you've seen Jake Allen. When he's great, he's very good. But when he struggles, he
and
can't
also,
stop
I mean,
a beach ball.
Allen's on the back nine of his career. I mean, Allen's not a young guy. Like, Binnington, Jake Allen's, sure, if you want him to be your backup goalie, sure. And we have to give him credit. Game three and game four, you know, he was the goalie. Yeah. He got the wins, I should say, for St. Louis. But I have no problem. You know, a lot of people were all over Binnington and saying that, you know, they should have gone with Jake Allen, everything like that. Binnington was the guy who was a big part of winning your Stanley Cup, right? Like, yes, Ryan O'Reilly, Alex Pietrangelo, you know, Schwartz, Braden Schenn, all these guys. But Binnington was the best goalie in the playoffs last year. I mean, I don't have to remind you and everybody else how good he was against the Jets in the first round. Like, Binnington was amazing. So he had a terrible series. He had a terrible game last night. He probably should have been pulled earlier, but I don't think there's any questions there about, you know, who's your goalie next year.
Probably not. And I mean, it just, you know, I just found it amazing that the Blues in a go home, in a win or go home situation,
yep,
didn't have the fight that you would expect from a Stanley Cup champion.
Yep, fair enough.
And I would attribute that to a lot of what Rick Bonus, you know, alluded to and made his comments about, saying that there's a connection that these guys, especially guys who have, you know, young families,
yep,
that, you know, when the prospect of going home is dangling right in front of you, and you've just won the Stanley Cup last year, maybe you're not giving it the same all that you would give it in a normal circumstance when, you know, you always see your family game in and game out.
Drew, let's give Vancouver a ton of credit, though, right? Like, Vancouver was the better team in the series.
Yeah,
like,
they were.
This series could have easily gone to seven games. We talked about Game 5. Like, that game was for the taking, and I truly believe if the Blues win Game 5, they probably win the series, just because, you know, they have the veteran leadership and are I think, up front are a more talented team. We also have to mention, too, I mean, you didn't have Tarasenko for four of the games.
Sure.
Right? Like, that's a big factor. Yes, Tarasenko didn't have a very good round robin.
He's
injured. Injured.
You have to wonder how chronic is that shoulder going to be now, because he had to go back and he left the bubble and he's getting it examined and everything else. And you wonder if this is going to be a long-term lingering issue that he's going to have to try and play through.
Absolutely. Good point. And, you know, if you want to play devil's advocate, Vancouver didn't have Tyler Myers. Alex Edler, we weren't sure if he was going to play in Game 6. And Tyler Toffoli, who was really good for Vancouver after they acquired him, he was injured in the qualification round. So no Toffoli, no Myers, and Edler, we know, is not 100%. So Vancouver is dealing with injuries too, and they persevered. So, I mean, both teams are dealing with things.
And it'll now be a battle of the V's, the Vancouver Canucks against the Vegas Golden Knights in round two, along with the Stars Avalanche series that we'll talk about later on in the program. But when we come back, we look at the Eastern Conference series for round two. The Islanders and the Flyers, the Lightning and the Bruins, much more to come. We'll also check out the Odd Shark inbox when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Porpoisalo finds Savard. Out of the reach of Gavrikov in front. Points alone. He scores! Braden Point has won the series for the Lightning. 5-4 in overtime. Braden Point scores at 5:12 of the first overtime. John Cooper in Tampa Bay moving on in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Tampa Bay Lightning moving on, dispatching the Columbus Blue Jackets. Rick Peckham with the call. I want to pay tribute to Rick. That was his retirement call. That was his last game. A hockey legend, being the broadcaster for, I think, 25 years or something along those lines. That was his final call. He's going to move off into retirement. Nice way to go out, calling an OT winner for the team that he broadcasts for, the Tampa Bay Lightning. So salute to you, Rick. He's been on the program many times. So congratulations on a wonderful career with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Want to check out the Odds Shark inbox presented by Odds Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Throughout the course of the show, we've been asking you for your memories of Dale Hawerchuk, be they an on-ice memory or maybe a personal memory of an experience you've had with Dale. You can send us those comments at Illegal Curve, or you can text them to us, 129090. Standard messaging does apply if you send us via text. Winnipeg Sports Nerd says that when he was 10 years old, himself and a classmate wrote a letter to Dale Hawerchuk for a school project. 2 weeks later, he received two autographed photos in the mail, along with an autographed photo of goaltender Dougie Sotart. Unfortunately, he says he does not have those photos today, but he made our day as a young kid. So thank you to Winnipeg Sports Nerd for contributing that comment via Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's, of course, brought to you by Odd Shark. Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets, we find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. So, Mr. Ginsburg, looking at the Eastern Conference second-round matchups, you have Tampa Bay versus Boston in what is a battle of two Atlantic Division heavyweights. It's sort of funny, you know, the big complaint, of course, about the playoff format is that teams that are almost too good are facing each other in the second round, and then this year, with it being a slightly different format because of the pandemic, you are maybe hoping to avoid these matchups, but this is what you get in the second round. It's the proverbial 2-3 battle in the Eastern Conference, the Lightning and the Bruins, and then the top seed Philadelphia Flyers are going to face off against the New York Islanders.
Yeah, the top seed.
Well, you know, everything's in quotes this year. Let's start with the Lightning Bruins. The Lightning, of course, slay the dragon that is the Columbus Blue Jackets after getting swept last year as, you know, overwhelming favorites. They pay back the Blue Jackets in a five-game win. obviously much closer series than five games would indicate, given that two of those five went to overtime. And the Bruins, to me, are equally as impressive, if not more impressive, in that they lose their all-world goaltender in Tuukka Rask. He elects to leave the bubble and go be with his family. And they get rid easily, I'll say, relatively easily, of the Carolina Hurricanes, the Hurricanes team that was the sexy pick going into this, you know, first round of the playoffs after how well they performed against the New York Rangers. So how do you see this Lightning Bruins epic battle in round two?
Yeah, well, that's what it is, epic. And it kind of, you know, just talking about, you know, how it's unfortunate in a way that the Lightning and the Bruins are playing in the second round as opposed to the East Final, right? It kind of reminds you of Pittsburgh and Washington, right? Remember on this show we were talking about that for years, how, you know, you would like to see that as the East Final, but you knew that either Pittsburgh or Washington was going to have to beat the other in order to go to the Stanley Cup Final and eventually win the Cup. And obviously the Capitals, once they finally did that, they ended up getting their first Cup. But, I mean, this is going to be a very close series in my opinion. And I go back and forth. You know, my pick, even though my pick doesn't matter at this point because it was almost a year ago, I picked the Bruins to win the Stanley Cup and go up against the Vegas Golden Knights. And obviously, you know, Colorado is looking like the top team in the West. So if Vegas is going to, you know, get to the Cup Final, they're going to have to go through Colorado most likely, maybe Dallas. They're also going to have to beat Vancouver in the second round. But, you know, going back to the Lightning and the Bruins, I mean, David Pastrnak has to be talked about as well because, you know, he missed a couple games, then he came back. And, you know, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, we know that that's the perfection line. And, you know, David Krejci has always been so solid on that second line with, you know, Jake DeBrusk and whoever, you know, happens to be on that second line. But, I mean, the Bruins right now, that is, you know, the big question mark. Is Yaroslav Halak going to be able, you know, to continue his hot play? And, you know,
there aren't any other options besides Halak
but
now.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I think Halak is going to be fine. And, you know, we've got Ty Anderson coming up. You know, Ty Anderson covers the Bruins for 98.5, the Hub in Boston. And, you know, he's always a great guest and he knows the Bruins better than anybody. And, you know, he wrote about how good Halak has been in his career in elimination games. And his save percentage is over 950 in elimination games in the playoffs, which is incredible. That goes back to Montreal.
The thing about Halak this year, though, is this is a guy, him and Rask have been in a bit of a timeshare. I mean, that, you know, neither guy is playing 60 games. It's been pretty close to, you know, 45, 35, you know, in terms of 45, 37 in terms of the 82 games since they've been a goaltending tandem in Boston. It keeps Rask fresh. It keeps Halak fresh. Neither guy is young by any stretch. So it'll be interesting, you know, in a seven-game series that is a relatively compact seven-game series, there is a back-to-back within the series as well. How does Halak handle the workload? How does he handle being the guy when the backup goaltender is basically not an option in a guy who's never really played in the NHL, in Daniel Vilardar?
Yeah.
So how does Halak handle being the guy for the Boston Bruins as opposed to Vasilevsky in Tampa, where Vasilevsky is used to the workload that comes with being a clear-cut number one goaltender? When he, you know, Vasilevsky is a guy who plays 60, 65 games a year. So playing, you know, in a seven-game series with games including back-to-backs, that won't faze him at all.
No, I agree. And the goalie matchup, in most series, we know the goalie matchups are key, right? But I think also the reason why I like the Lightning in the series, and we were talking about this off air before the show started, you know, talking about, you know, what the Lightning had to give up to acquire Blake Coleman, what they had to give up to get Barclay Goodrow. Like, to me, the Lightning learned their lesson last year, right? Like, they get swept after the, what was it, 125-point season, whatever it was. They get swept by the Lightning. As you said at the top of the segment, they slay the Dragon. They beat those same Blue Jackets in five games. Now they've got over that hump. They're in the second round, and they obviously get the Cup favorites, right? The President's Trophy favorites. But to me, the big difference between this year and last year is the depth, right? Like, Patrick Maroon, you got Kevin Shattenkirk for nothing. Yeah. Shattenkirk's another guy, you know, could be an option for the Jets, by the way. But when you're talking about Shattenkirk, he is, what is he making? $2 million, $1.7 million, something like that? Shattenkirk got a big goal in Game 5 for the Lightning. And, you know, Zach Bogosian, you know, he's on the top pair with Victor Hedman, right? Like, the guys that they acquired prior to the deadline, and the guys they got in the offseason, like, that third line, I mentioned Barclay Goodrow and Blake Coleman. Yanni Gourde is the third line center.
Yeah, it's not a third line on. Well, that's a third line on a Stanley Cup winning team.
Well, and you know, Anthony Cirelli right now is up on that second line. He was the third line center last year. Killorn and Tyler Johnson are the other wingers on that second line. But to me, that's something that the Bruins can't match up with. Like, the Bruins' depth scoring cannot match up with the Lightning's depth scoring. And you know, our good friend, you know, Carson Kuhlman has been, you know, in and out of the lineup. Unfortunately, towards the end of the series, you know, in games 4 and 5, he wasn't in the lineup. But, you know, Charlie Coyle, you know, great third line center. But when you're talking about guys like, you know, Sean Corrali, you know, Chris Wagner, Joachim Nordstrom, these guys.
The Lightning are doing this without Stamkos.
Well, absolutely. And that's
they're
the,
doing,
you know,
it without Steven Stamkos.
That's the big question mark. Like, we don't expect Stamkos, you know, to be back early in the series, but, you know, perhaps later in the series he's able to come back. But, you know, when you look at that fourth line of the Lightning and you're able to, you know, put out Patrick Maroon and, you know, Cedric Paquette, those are really good players. So to me, like, it's going to be the Lightning offense versus the Bruins defense. The goaltending battle is going to be, you know, really interesting, but it's really going to be determined at 5-on-5 because both of these teams have a lot of firepower.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, this is going to be, you know, a very closely, you know, contested series. I think it'll probably go 6 or 7 games, but I like the Lightning.
I like the Lightning too. We'll talk more about the Flyers and the Islanders as well. But when we come back, you mentioned Ty Anderson from 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, is going to join us to talk more about the Lightning Bruins series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number 3 coming up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Want your memories of Dale Hawerchuk, of course, his untimely passing earlier this week. You also can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, Massachusetts, we're pleased to be joined by Ty Anderson. Ty, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing very well. Thank you, Ty. Always appreciate you joining us, giving us your time to talk about the Bruins. And, Ty, I mean, I have to say that of all the first-round playoff performances, the Bruins, to me, had one of the most impressive ones. You know, you're going up against the Carolina Hurricanes, a team that was a sexy pick, given how easily they were able to dispatch the New York Rangers in the qualification round. The Bruins have the adversity of losing their goaltender, Tuukka Rask, as he elects to go with his family and leave the bubble. And the Bruins were able to handle the Hurricanes in relative ease to set up this second-round epic battle against the Tampa Bay Lightning. How impressed were you with the performance of the Boston Bruins?
Definitely impressed, especially after Game 2, losing that game, and then Tuukka opts out. It was kind of like, okay, this could be their undoing. You know, this could be where the wheels fall off here. A lot of things kind of happening. You know, 3 games in 4 days. If the series went 6 games, you were talking about a back-to-back. So there was a lot of ability for this one to sort of slip out of their hands, I think. But this is sort of the value of having a veteran core, you know, having Bergeron and Krejci and Chara, Marchand, guys that have been through it now for the last decade. And I think you saw that play out, especially as the series progressed. You know, they sort of realized what was at play with each game here, which I think is a testament to Bergeron and Chara's leadership, that they made sure these players understood what was at stake here with each game. And mentally, they were as tuned in, I think, as I've seen them, especially, obviously, since the whole pandemic. You know, that their round-robin showing was a little worrisome. But I think that, you know, come game 3, 4, and 5, that was the Bruins team that you saw, you know, in March and February.
Ty, how healthy do you think David Pastrnak is right now? He obviously returned for Game 5, had a couple of assists on the power play. We know that he missed those 3 games in the first round against the Hurricanes, but does it go without saying that he's not 100% right now? Obviously, this time of year, you could say that about a lot of players, but in your opinion, is he healthy enough to be as impactful as the Bruins are going to need him to be going up against the big, bad Lightning?
Yeah, so this is tough, right? Because I think that under normal circumstances, you'd say that he's going to get healthier. But, you know, they finish the series on Wednesday. They begin the series tomorrow. This series may have two back-to-backs if it does go seven. So that's difficult, right? So I would say that I thought watching Wednesday's game that he was at, let's just say, 60 to 70%. But now I don't know how, is this going to be healed up by Sunday? I think it's some sort of muscle injury based on what we saw, that he jumps in at the end of game one, the overtime. It looks like he holds at it. He grabs at his ribs or his back or something on when he lands. But I think that he gave you about 60 to 70%. He didn't have the same finish, but I thought his skating was fine. He gets five shots on goal. He plays 20 and a half minutes. So the usage was there to indicate that he's giving you enough to play a regular basis. But we're going to have to see if he is healthier having some time off, or if his condensed schedule sort of undoes a lot of that work there.
Ty Anderson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Ty is with 98.5, the Sports Hub, in Boston. Now, Ty, obviously we know that it's going to be Yaroslav Halak or basically bust going forward for the Boston Bruins. You know, Halak has got a ton of experience, you know, a veteran goaltender, but he hasn't really been the guy, the man, game in and game out for a number of years. You know, Rask is obviously the number one, and there's been a bit of a timeshare at times between these two guys just to keep each of these veterans healthy. How do you think Halak will handle, the stress that might come with playing a lot of games in a short window of time against a very talented Tampa Bay Lightning team?
Yeah, this is the real test. And you know, I think that you go back and you watch Halak in round one, he did his job. You know, I don't think he had to steal any of these games. But he performed well enough to win in games three and five. Game four was rough. He had three goals on 19 shots, all stoppable shots, all pretty ugly goals, in my opinion. So the pressure's on him now. If the Bruins can hang their hat on one thing, it's the fact that he's been really good in elimination games. That goes back to his time in Montreal, which, again, was a decade ago now. And it goes back to the Islanders' first-round series in 2015 or 16 here. But he's been pretty good in elimination games, 7-2, a 954 save percentage. So maybe they hope that, you know, the ice water in the veins is still there, all these years later when they need it against Lightning, and if they advance beyond that, you know, Philadelphia or New York. But it's him. I mean, behind him is Daniel Vladar. Vladar's never played an NHL game, regular season or postseason. So that's a problem. So it is him, you know, and so they're going to have to find ways to play stronger team defense, I think, to alleviate some of that pressure. You go back to what you're talking about with the Rask and Halak timeshare. Yeah, there's been one extended stretch here in Boston throughout Halak's entire two-year run where he's been the guy. You know, Rask had a personal emergency back in November 2018. He had leave the team for about a weekend. And Halak had to start both games with a back-to-back. He won both games, but that's the only time. You know, 48 hours is the only time he's ever had to be the guy for the Bruins. Now he has to do it for, you know, four rounds. And can he do that? Given the schedule and the heavy nature of it, I do have my doubts. So it's about the team defense, in my opinion, limiting the amount of pucks on net there.
So, Ty, I wanted to ask you a question specifically about who you think on the Bruins maybe is going to need to elevate their game against the Lightning. I mean, I think you'd agree everybody is going to need to be really good against this Lightning team that has aspirations of winning a Stanley Cup this year. But if you look at that round robin and that first round series against the Hurricanes, the perfection line, obviously, we know what to expect, and we expect them to be great every single game, if not perfect, if you, like that little terrible joke there. But is there one guy or two guys? Because we were talking about this earlier, and to me, I mean, the Lightning have a significant advantage when you talk about depth scoring, but is there one or two players for you that are really going to need to be better if they have a chance at beating the Lightning?
Yeah, well, you look at the first line, they're back to sort of doing their thing on a consistent basis. The second line, for the first time all year, with Jake DeBrusk and Andre Kasha between David Krejci, is doing its job. So I look at the third line, and that's where you look at Charlie Coyle and Nick Ritchie. Now, Nick Ritchie fell out of favor in the first round because Carolina's too quick. So this is a series that's more his speed. You look at some of the guys, Lightning Hal on the bottom six there with Paquette, with Pat Maroon, with Barclay Goodrow. There's guys that will allow Nick Ritchie to play his game and be effective. So I look at Nick Ritchie, and then I look at Charlie Coyle, because you go back to last year's, their middle rounds, Coyle really was a factor for them. I thought that he was at his best in the Columbus series and at times in the St. Louis series. So you look at that Tampa Bay defense, and you can sort of say, okay, that's where Coyle needs to thrive here against some of these matchups that he can draw against Tampa Bay. You know, whether it's Zach Bogosian, whether it's Kevin Shattenkirk, whoever their matchup is, Coyle and Rich need to be able to take advantage of it. And I think if they do that, now they're on more even footing with Tampa Bay. Because Tampa Bay, I don't think, last time these teams played, the Bruins didn't have an answer for Braden Point. They didn't have an answer for him. They couldn't slow him down. He was ultimately the difference maker. So if that's the case, I think you need Coyle or Richie to step up and sort of match them with some counterpunches.
Ty Anderson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ty is with 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, talking about the Bruins. The Bruins and the Lightning are going to meet in an epic second-round series coming up here. You know, Ty, I look at Andre Kasha, a guy who's still looking for his first goal in these playoffs. He has four assists in the six games that he's played. Is this a guy that the Bruins need? You need to get increased production from, especially when you go up against a Lightning team that has scoring really all throughout their entire lineup?
Yeah, I think that they want to see him land more shots on net. That's one of the reasons why they acquired him from Anaheim at the deadline, was that they felt that this was the shoot-first presence that line needed. But what I'll say is this, is that I think that what he is doing right now is allowing David Krejci, who never shoots enough for his skill set, in my opinion, and Jake DeBrusk, who has been hot and cold this year in the regular season, finally has his legs, it looks like, here in the postseason. What he's doing is allowing them to shoot more and them to get their shot back on track and get the Bruins on the board. So maybe they're okay with this role, but I would say that, yeah, based on who they thought they were acquiring, Kasha needs to shoot more and really sort of elevate his game. That said, I think that, again, they like what they see out of him because he's making his line mates better. And when you look at the Bruins this year, before that trade, that spot on that second line, that right wing, was such a dead zone for them. It was unbelievable. They would rotate about 10 different guys there over the course of a 70-game season. And it's been a problem now. Honestly, that's been a problem since Jerome McGinley left Boston back in 2014. That right side with David Krejci has been a complete revolving door of guys who either aren't ready, They're past their prime, they're a young kid just trying to hack it in that role. So Kasha has done his job in sort of stabilizing that line, but of course you always want more. I mean, you traded a first round pick to get this guy, so you sort of expect more. But I think right now he's highlighting the best attributes of his line mate. So they'll take it. I think it's a yes and no kind of answer, I suppose.
Ty, just one final question for you. I don't know if you saw Rick Bowness's comments, of course, Dallas Stars head coach earlier this week. For those who didn't see or hear his comments, he was basically saying that people don't understand how hard it is for the players and everyone in the bubble. And obviously, Dallas isn't even in the same conference. I am eventually going to get to a point here, but I wanted to ask you about the Bruins specifically, because they went. Well, you cover the Bruins, but they went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And just what was your take, on those comments and that kind of perception that just because these guys are millionaire hockey players, they shouldn't be complaining. They should just be happy. What are your kind of thoughts on that for a team like the Bruins? Obviously, a lot of guys on the team have families of their own now. But is that something that maybe hockey fans should give these guys a little bit more credit for? That this is a unique situation. Obviously, they're fighting for the Stanley Cup, but it's also it's hard on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a difficult sort of argument, right? Is that when people say, "Well, they can't." No one says you can't miss your family because you make millions of dollars. Like that's a ridiculous argument. You can't say that, I think, with a straight face, and that's sort of the typical response from people is it's difficult to live in a bubble. Well, you make millions, so it's worth it. Well, yeah, but you can still have emotions and feelings. You're a human being, right? I mean, So I think that any fan criticizing these guys right now, especially when they're doing this for our entertainment, yeah, they want to win a championship, but ultimately it's a game, and it's for us to sit here and talk about and watch and enjoy and have escape from our own real-world problems right now. So I feel that 100%, and I understand it, because think about where we were, right? Like 5 months ago, we're all sitting in our houses, we're in lockdown. You know, it's difficult. It's not easy. And I think that anyone who's discounting that because these guys have bigger checks than us, I don't think they're seeing the whole picture. You know, it's tough to be a father and to not be there for your kid for an undetermined amount of time. I think that's especially difficult for you know, NHL players when you're, in some case, a country away, or, you know, you're missing some big moments in your kid's life, whatever the case may be. And so I completely understand where they're coming from. And I think the people who don't, I think that they're choosing not to look at it rationally because they just see the dollar signs and go, how could you ever feel like that? I'd kill for that, which is a valid point, I suppose, but it's not a valid point for determining emotions and how a player should feel at this point in time. So I don't blame anyone who is having a difficult time getting focused in empty arenas and away from families, because you're thinking about hockey 24 hours a day within this bubble. I think about that. Like, there's no escape. So that's difficult, I think, on some players who like the idea of decompressing and seeing their family after a tough night at the office.
Ty Anderson covers the Boston Bruins for 98.5, the Sports Hub. The Bruins and the Lightning will do battle in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Ty, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Ty.
Cheers,
appreciate
Ty.
It. When we come back, we discuss two teams that were eliminated, the Calgary Flames and the Washington Capitals. Changes afoot for both teams. We break those down upon return. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Rasmus Anderson moving in. He scores! 3-0 Calgary. Back out, shot by Heiskanen. He scores! The Stars are on the board. Janmark in the lineup for Dallas tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And the Stars tie the game. Lindell from the left point at the flex in off the stick of Cam Talbot. Gurionov tees one up. Puck is loose. They score! 4-3 Dallas. Heiskanen with a shot. Again, Redick looking for the puck. They score! Joe Pavelski. 5-3 Dallas. 4 goals for the Stars here in the second period.
There's some great play-by-play announcers, but like in terms of Kenny Albert's voice,
he's great. I love Kenny Albert.
He's pretty tough to beat.
He's a great play-by-play announcer. That was from the Flames Stars game 6. The Flames jump out as a house on fire, lead 3-0. You think, hey, Ezzy's going to get his game 7. Ezzy didn't get his game 7. Narrator, Ezzy didn't get his game 7. It was 7 unanswered goals by the Dallas Stars, and the Flames go home. The Stars move on to face the Colorado Avalanche. Game 1 of that series gets underway later on tonight. I mean, it was a flurry of goals by the Dallas Stars, and a flurry of changes are going to result in Calgary. I think it's clear now that Cam Talbot and David Riddick are not the answer in goal. They can get hot. They can give you a stretch run of Cam Talbot. He can do you well for, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 5 games, 7 games, but he can't be your long-term answer. He's not going to be your Stanley Cup winning goaltender.
You're saying that he's not Big Save Dave.
I'm saying, I don't know. Oh, clearly Big Save Dave wasn't Big Save Dave either, because he couldn't stop a beach ball that the Stars were throwing at him either there. Big offseason in Calgary. You know the talk about Johnny Gaudreau. You know the talk about their defense is going to certainly have a lot of changes on it, with TJ Brody being a free agent and Travis Hamonic being a free agent, and Johnny Gaudreau apparently maybe being on the trade market, and the questions about Sean Monahan and his future in Calgary as well. Big questions, tough decisions for Brad Treliving and the coaching and the, you know, in the front office in Calgary. Because Jeff Ward, who's still their interim head coach, does he get the job full-time after he replaced Bill Peters, who resigned or was forced to resign as a result of the racism scandal, which feels like it was about 20 years ago. It actually wasn't 20
years
ago.
It really does, yeah.
So, I mean, big questions in Calgary, but
yep.
I think more The only answer I think that they have in Calgary is that they have to build around Matthew Tkachuk. I think that's the only answer that they have in Calgary, is that it's his team, and that, you know, you keep Mark Giordano around as well, of course, but he's 36 years old. So the torch is slowly being passed from Giordano to Matthew Tkachuk, and then a lot of other questions surrounding that franchise right now, especially losing in such a... Well, anytime you give up 7 unanswered goals, I'm going to use the word embarrassing. It's embarrassing to give up 7 unanswered goals after being up 3-0 in an elimination game in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You mentioned, you know, this is, you know, a torch passing, so to speak, for the Calgary Flames, because, as you know, they've been building their team around Sean Monahan and around Johnny Gaudreau and Mark Giordano for, what are we talking about, the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Matthew Tkachuk is their best all-around player now. And, you know, we know that Johnny Gaudreau's only got 2 years left on his contract. We've talked about this, you know, before, going back to the Jets-Flames series. Like, Johnny Gaudreau's long-term future is in doubt in Calgary. You know, that you're going to have to pay him probably, you know, upwards of, you know, probably $7 million, you know, on his next contract. And, you know, the rumors have been out there forever that he wants to be, you know, closer to his hometown, right? That's why the Flyers,
Philly, you know, Jersey, all those teams.
James Van Riemsdyk, you know, they have that friendship there, right? So, I mean, there have been those links there. So, I mean, I think there is always the possibility a guy like Johnny Gaudreau is traded. Now, when you're talking about Sean Monahan, I mean, to me, you have to be careful if you're the Flames. You can't, I don't think, completely tear this down. I agree, Drew, that
I would trade Gaudreau and I'd keep Monahan. If I
that's what I would do as well. And I think when you're talking about, you know, some of those goaltenders, you know, that could be available to the Flames, you're talking about Braden Holtby, and I think you're talking about Robin Lehner. I mean, if the Vegas Golden Knights don't keep Robin Lehner, I mean, doesn't that make a lot of sense for the Flames? Like, you're absolutely right. They have to address their goaltending situation.
Braden Holtby doesn't address their goaltending situation because Braden Holtby hasn't been very good for the last number of years.
But I think I would take Holtby over Cam Talbot and David Rittich.
I would as
well. If you can't get Robin Lehner, is what I'm saying, I would take Braden Holtby as a consolation prize.
The problem that...
I wouldn't give him a 5 or 6 year deal, but I would sign Braden Holtby certainly to a 1 or 2 year deal.
Yeah, the problem that Calgary's facing is they need a clear-cut number one.
I think he is.
Who?
Braden Holtby.
Oh, not his numbers in Washington the last couple of years have been bad.
Well, also, the fact that Ilya Samsonov was clearly the heir apparent.
Yeah.
Heir apparent. I should say, not hair apparent.
No, I don't know what a hair apparent is.
I don't know either.
I don't have any hair anymore, so I'm not worried about what it apparent or apparently isn't.
But Drew, honestly, though, regardless of, you know, whether we think Braden Holtby is the answer there, we both agree that they need a number one goaltender, and they need to start rebuilding their team. Not rebuilding in the sense that this team isn't going to be a playoff team for the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, but
the last 2 years,
I think you have to figure out who your core is, and I think the Flames, you could argue, they've kind of lost their identity.
Let me ask you this. Which team would you rather have right now? The Jets or the Flames? I mean, both teams.
Not even close, the Jets.
Really? How much of that has to do with the fact that you have Connor Hellebuyck?
Well, part of it. A lot of it, to be honest with you. But, I mean, I think the high-end talent for the Jets is better than the high-end talent for the Flames. And that's why a lot of people were picking the Jets to beat the Flames. I mean, Cam Talbot outplayed Connor Hellebuyck in the first round. And he was badly outplayed. Him and David Rittich were badly outplayed in the second round, right? And like Anton Khudobin, we didn't expect it to necessarily be him. Ben Bishop played the one game, and we're not really sure what's going on with Ben Bishop. Like, is he an option against Colorado? Because
health questions.
Well, yeah, and we have no clue really what the injury is.
Ben Bishop and health questions almost go together, you know, perfectly because he's had so many health issues throughout his career.
And Anton Khudobin has done a great job. Like he is similar to Boston with Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. Khudobin for years was the backup to Tuukka Rask, right? And he was always so good there. And so give Dallas credit, give Jim Neal credit. They made sure that they had a good 1B goalie, right? Mm-hmm. But the point is that Rittich and Talbot, you know, they weren't able to get it done for the Flames in net. And it wasn't just that. It has to be brought up again. Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, the two of them, and obviously Matthew Tkachuk was injured. We can't forget about that.
Right.
But Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan were not good at 5-on-5. Like, most of their damage was done on the power play.
One even strength goal at 5-on-5.
That's what I'm saying.
And it went into an empty net. They were great on the power play, so they get credit for power play because it still counts as a goal. But 5-on-5, when your two best players, you know, with Tkachuk out of the lineup, Gaudreau and Monahan, they got one goal, and it's into an empty net. That's not good enough.
No, and, I mean, when you're talking about who the best line was for the Flames in that series, Dylan Dubé to me and Milan Lucic was really good in that series as well. And Sam Bennett, the third line was good against the Jets and they were good against the Stars. Yes. You know,
Dubé and Bennett were physical forces.
Yes.
In that series.
And Milan Lucic got some goals and he was a force.
He was better against the Jets than he was against the
Stars.
And
he also took a really stupid penalty in game five there, which led to the comeback.
Yeah.
Really, if you think about it, that kind of, I think, just awoke the bear when you're talking about, you know, Lucic taking that minor and then the Stars, you know, score and then
that contract still, contract is still an albatross on the Flames books.
Oh, it's a terrible contract.
Like, there's still almost no justification for having made that deal, you know, when they did. I'd still rather have James Neal than Milan Lucic.
Absolutely, but give Lucic credit. He was good in the playoffs. Like, he wasn't the reason why the Flames lost the series.
No.
It was because Gaudreau and Monahan weren't very good in the first round against the Stars, and it was because they didn't get the goaltending. And obviously, yeah, you miss a guy like Travis Hamonic. You miss a guy like Matthew Tkachuk. The Stars are just a better team.
They
Simple
are.
Simple as that.
It'll be a fascinating offseason in Calgary, though, one to keep a very close eye on heading into next year, whenever next year begins. When we come back, Kaylee Chelios covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. She's a reporter for the team. She's going to join us to talk about the Lightning. They dispatch the Blue Jackets, and they're going to face the Bruins in the second round. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. I was going to say you can reach us in studio, but you can't. The studio today is my front porch. Which is kind of nice weather, you know, nice little weather. You hear some birds chirping a little bit. Not a bad way to spend a little bit of a Saturday morning, of course. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Tampa Bay Lightning reporter Kaylee Chelios. Kaylee, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Kaylee. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to face the Boston Bruins in the second round, an epic Atlantic Division showdown. If this was a regular playoff format, I suppose I could say that. But before we look forward to their series against the Bruins, we have to look back at the Lightning dispatching the Columbus Blue Jackets in five games, two of them in overtime, including, of course, the Game 1 five overtime epic. Psychologically, for this franchise, how important was that five-game series victory? And does it help at all that it was five games as opposed to being a seven-game nail-biter in terms of the psychological side of things?
I think so. You know, Columbus had to play a lot of meaningful hockey in a big series against Toronto going in there. I think for the Lightning, it'll be nice for them to not have to play all the way to a game seven, especially against a team like Columbus who, you know, they really don't seem to run out of steam. I think it was only in game three, really, where you start to see the fatigue come in, and they admitted that. Tortorella kind of talked about it. You know, they played the five overtimes in game one against the Lightning, and by game three, I think you could start to see some of the fatigue set in a little bit, both mentally and just the way they were skating. But I do think it's important for the Lightning now. I mean, it's a luxury to be able to have the extra days now to rest up and recuperate to be ready for round two. But I think even though the players will say, you know, it's new personnel, it's new teams, although that's very true coming into this year's playoffs, you certainly don't forget the emotions and the feelings of last year's playoffs and the early exit, the disappointment. You know, I talked to a couple players just talking about the revenge. You know, I think they were all craving it a little bit in anticipation for this series, and they opened it up with a huge historic win in five overtimes and closed it, you know, in an overtime as well. I think it was a great series. It was a big challenge for the Lightning. This is a hard matchup, you know, defensive, really well-coached, structured team, very consistent. You know, even coming into the last game, they, you know, Columbus had the opportunity to win that game, and I think the Lightning showed a lot after giving up the lead to come back and score three unanswered to win it.
You know, Kaylee, it seemed like all of those moves that the Lightning made prior to the trade deadline, which seems like 2 years ago at this point, but all of those moves that were made, you know, giving up the first-round picks, bringing in Barclay Goodrow, Blake Coleman, Zach Bogosian, and then also, you know, the move to bring in Patrick Maroon last summer, it just seemed like every single one of those players played a big role in that first-round win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. Is that, in your opinion, kind of the biggest difference between this team this year and last year, the team that obviously, you know, wasn't able to get past the Blue Jackets? Just, it seems like those depth pieces maybe that weren't there last year are there this year.
Yeah, this is a different team, different leadership group. There's different voices in the locker room. You know, some of those players that Julien Brisebois added include Kevin Shattenkirk, who, you know, after the game, Blake Coleman had talked about having a big voice in the locker room after giving up a goal earlier that he wished he could have taken back. You know, he talked between the second and third period. The Lightning had a really bad second period in Game 5, and he was kind of the voice in the locker room that they listened to, and he came out and ended up scoring the goal. They come within one with minutes left on the clock in the third period. But, you know, it's not just Kevin Shattenkirk. You mentioned several different players coming into the lineup. You know, Zach Bogosian, a player who the Lightning probably wouldn't have even signed had it not been for the injuries on the back end to Jan Ruda and McDonough, and then Victor Hedman coming down the stretch at the end of the regular season. And so he's a player kind of like Kevin Shattenkirk, who had a difficult time parting with their previous team. They weren't really happy with the situation and the way things ended up. They were kind of looking to prove themselves. They had a bit of a chip on their shoulder. They're young, experienced veterans who complement, you know, this decor with Victor Hedman. You know, you've got a Norris Trophy winner and the reigning Hart Trophy on the team as well. In Nikita Kucherov, you've got a Vezina finalist and winner in Vasilevsky. So these experienced kind of role players come in. They feel comfortable on an experienced team. And, you know, they're just playing really at the top of their game. I think we're seeing a completely different Kevin Shattenkirk than we have in the past because he's healthy and he's on a team that can support him and he doesn't have to carry the load. Same with Zach Bogosian. You know, this is his very first playoff, you know, in 12 seasons. He's 30 years old, I believe, and he's playing incredible. I think he's a great skater. He's got a tremendous shot. He just looks like a totally different player out there right now, and he's taking it all in. So you kind of have to tip your hat to Julien Brisebois and in the past even Steve Yzerman for the players that they were able to bring into this lineup and add to the roster and that complement kind of their core assets that they've been able to maintain even with getting different players in there. And then up front, you know, you talk about the depth that the Lightning have. They're four lines deep. It was the Gord line with Blake Coleman and Goodrow, who were the trade line acquisitions, who were a huge difference in Game 4. And then you come into Game 5, and Coleman gets his first goal, kind of energizes the bench. Obviously, the Lightning had a letdown in the second period, did not play their best hockey, but those players have all been factoring in. You know, the Gord line with Gaudreau and Coleman have been consistently probably the best line each and every night. You know, without looking at the high-end star-studded roster the Lightning have, that line was a difference maker in their energizers, and every play they're making, even when it's not on the score sheet, you know, they're doing all the little things that help win games, and it's just kind of a bonus that they managed to contribute goals as well in those final two games. So I do think that this team is completely different. They only have one Stanley Cup winner in Pat Maroon, but I think he's been a huge guy for the locker room. You know, just talking from the experience, especially on a Blues team last season that was all over the map and then really found their game coming into the postseason last year before winning the Cup. So I think Julien, you know, has done a tremendous job finding these players who are experienced and veteran players, bring some grit, bring a little bit more physicality to the lineup too, which is something the Lightning have been knocked on. But he's done a great job, and these players have certainly made an impact already in this first series.
Kaylee Chelios is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kaylee covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, we haven't even mentioned Steven Stamkos' name, which is hard to believe given that he's, you know, one of the most prolific goal scorers of the past decade in the NHL. Kaylee, do you expect to see Steven Stamkos in this series? And if he plays, I mean, what percentage of health could he possibly be at this point in time?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't really know. I mean, it's great to see that he's been in and around the locker room. He's been skating and doing rehab and everything. But unfortunately, you know, the last we've talked about it with John Cooper was just that he's going to be out indefinitely. And given, you know, his experience with injuries, you know, it's tough for him, but I think, you know, he'll come back when he's ready, and he's, you know, he's a patient, smart player. He's not going to rush back into the playoffs just to only re-injure himself when he's not ready. So I think it's just going to come down to him, you know, being the one who can decide, you know, that, not us, not the medical staff, not the coaching staff. I mean, he's an experienced leader, and I'm sure they'd all love to have him back on the ice, especially on the power play, which has, you know, been a little bit off, I'd say, without him in it, just trying to find some new personnel and some new chemistry there. But I don't know that we'll anticipate seeing him in this series. However, I think, you know, it looks promising. We may be able to get him at least in the playoffs. It's just going to, you know, come down to him. And, you know, he's just been through a lot of stuff in the past, so he knows when the right time is to come back and when it's not. So he's keeping it pretty private, understandably, and then we'll just have to wait and see.
Kaylee, I know Drew's got one more question for you about the upcoming Lightning and Bruins series, which starts it's tomorrow night, right? Not tomorrow afternoon,
yep.
I believe. But we wanted to ask you about Rick Peckham. Obviously, you know, it's his final call as a broadcaster, and what a way to go out, right? Braden Point, you know, wins the series in overtime, his second OT winner of the series. And we know that you've gotten to work with him for the last several years. And we should also give a shout-out for Brian Engblom, obviously, from Winnipeg. We know Brian really well, and we've had him on the show many times. But are you able just to, you know, share a few memories over your time with Rick Peckham and what it was like for you just to work with, obviously, a legendary broadcaster in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I mean, Rick Peckham's an incredible broadcaster, but he's an absolute gentleman. And I love working with him and Brian Engblom and just listening and learning from both of those guys in the booth the last four seasons that I've been with the team. But I mean, Rick has just always, he just has this poise and this patience and this amazing demeanor about him. And in addition, just being such an intelligent, hardworking, always working on his craft broadcaster. Like he really is one of the best to learn from. And he's always been so kind and, you know, generous with his advice and sharing his knowledge with me every time I'd have questions. You know, some of my favorite days were just sitting, watching practice with Rick and Brian and listening to them talk about the game. And no matter how many years, 20 plus years, he's been doing it, you know, he's just as interested and excited and has done just as much homework at home before practice going into that, just to listen to them talk about the game. It's, you know, you could just see the passion, the excitement and the interest. You know, he's truly a professional in every sense of the word. And I think I enjoyed, you know, really watching him on this monitor, watching him call his last overtime goal and the last goal of his career more than I probably enjoyed actually the reaction from the Lightning after they scored that. It was pretty emotional. And I know he kept it together for sure on the broadcast, just thanking everyone and, you know, in a really great speech sort of at the end of the broadcast. But can't say enough great things about Rick Peckham and his professionalism and how kind he was to me throughout my time there. Just so much information and such a great eye for hockey and the game. And it's an art form to be able to do what he does, and he's truly one of the best, just an absolute legend. Like I said, my favorite memories with Rick are probably just watching, you know, him looking at his stat sheets and his notes during every practice and getting to listen and pick his brain and watch practices together with him and Brian. They're a tremendous tandem, and it'll be tough to see them part ways going into next season, but I'm very excited for Rick and his retirement, being able to spend some time with family. He deserves it.
Kaylee Chelios covers the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Lightning and the Bruins, round two. It should be an epic. It gets underway tomorrow night. Kaylee, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Kaylee. Thanks so much. When we come back, one final segment. We look at some of the other series that are set to get underway in round two. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
McKinnon in front. Kadri scores. Fourth power play goal of the series. Avalanche lead 1-0. Girard shoots and scores. Second power power play goal for the Avalanche. 2-0. Here comes Kadri, moving in, he deeks, and he scores! 3-0, Colorado. Two goals for Kadri, the Colorado Avalanche advance. They eliminate the Arizona Coyotes. 4-1.
It's been the Kenny Albert show this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, using a lot of the Kenny's great calls from our friends at NBC Sports as it comes to the bubble games, the Colorado Avalanche. That was a talent disparity on the ice in their relatively effortless dispatching of the Arizona Coyotes, and really showing the disparity between the two teams. Yeah, they're both playoff teams, but that was a series where not all playoff teams are created equal. That's what we learned there. One final segment this Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. It's brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, a crowd favorite, a fan favorite, one of the best that they bring in. Kelly Taylor at Rumors Comedy Club tonight. There's two shows. There's not very many tickets available.
Good Saskatchewan boy.
A good Sasky boy, exactly. Yep. RumorsComedyClub.com. Type it in on the website, in your web browser. Buy those tickets now before it's too late.
You have to get Kelly on sometime.
Yeah, one of these days.
He's a hilarious guy.
He is. I've seen him before. We need to bring him on air one of these times. So next time he's in town, I'll try and make it happen, get Kelly Taylor.
You know
people. Come and see him. I know people. I know people who know people who know people. And
I know those people who know you that know those other people.
Yeah, but those people don't acknowledge knowing you. That's the difference. These people might return my call. I'm not sure that they're necessarily going to return yours there, Mr. Ginsburg. But that's okay. It's all fun and games here Saturday mornings on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Got a few minutes left. Let's look at some of the other second-round series. We've touched on them briefly. This Colorado-Dallas series, to me, is going to be a fun one. A lot of high power on both teams. It's fun to watch a guy like Cale Makar go up against a guy like Miro Heiskanen, two stud defensemen on the back ends for both teams. But right now, the Colorado Avalanche look like just an unstoppable juggernaut. Nathan MacKinnon right now is, you know, he's always been maybe on the fringe of that conversation about the best player in the world. I think he's moving up to almost be affirming himself as one of the guys you talk about in the same breath as McDavid and as Crosby. Nathan MacKinnon is really saying, I'm the best player in the NHL with some of his performances thus far in these Stanley Cup playoffs and in the round robin and the qualifying round and all that jazz that happened before.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about that when we were talking about the Hart Trophy, right?
Yeah.
Like, Nathan MacKinnon, I would say, is the second best player in the NHL. And, you know, at the very least, he's a top three player. And for me, it was like, you're watching that and the Avalanche were playing chess and the Coyotes were playing checkers, right? Like, it wasn't even close. Like, they won the one game, but the one game that they won, I forget if that was game two or game three, that was all Darcy Kemper.
Yeah.
Like, Darcy Kemper stole that game. So the Avalanche could have easily swept the Coyotes and, you know, give the Coyotes credit. They get to the playoffs, but I mean, this Avalanche team, I agree, Drew. I mean, this Avalanche team, if they're not the Stanley Cup favorite, they have to be considered a Stanley Cup contender at the very least. Like, I realize a lot of people in the West like the Golden Knights, but man, the Avalanche look good. And Nazem Kadri, as the Avalanche second line center, just looks right, right? Like, and he's playing so well. He's got 4 goals in his last 2 games. So yes, the big line of MacKinnon, Gabe Landeskog, and Mikko Rantanen, it's arguably one of the best lines. No, I would say it is one of the best lines in the league.
It was 14-2 in the last 2 games between the Avalanche and the Coyotes. 14-2. 7-1. And then 7-1.
I mean, the Avalanche scored 22 goals in 5 games.
Those aren't numbers that you hear in the NHL very often. It's rare that you see a talent disparity like you saw between the Avalanche and the Coyotes. I mean, 7-1 and 7-1, and you could almost see by the start of Game 5 that the Coyotes just didn't want to play Game 5. If the NHL had given them the option of saying, we'll just take a loss, you know, you play softball and you don't show up and you just take a 7-0 loss, I think the Coyotes would have considered that, because that's how bad it was in Game 5 after, you know, they maybe had a little bit of hope after Game 3. Game 4,
7-1 Colorado, and then Game 5 might as well not have occurred.
And you know, I think there's some parallels between the Avalanche and the Lightning, and I think they might be on a collision course to meet in the final, because you look at the Avalanche and the moves that they made. The Avalanche were good last year, but Cale Makar didn't play during the regular season.
No, he was still at college.
Right? So Cale Makar came in the playoffs and was good against the Flames in that first round, but they're just so deep, you know, the acquisitions they made. You know, Valerie Nichushkin on the third line, Pierre-Edward Belmar, you know, centering that fourth line with Matt Nieto and Manitoba's Matt Calvert. The Avalanche are just so strong top to bottom, so I think they're going to be really tough for the Stars. I really like the Avalanche in that series, and you know, they could end up facing Vegas in the West Final. It's going to be a great series.
We will bring you all the latest news here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and that does it for this edition on Saturday morning. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on tsn1290.ca, illegalcurve.com, and wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think. Big props to producer Sean Asor back at the station. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.